Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
It has been more than 20 years since a Democrat won statewide office in Texas. What accounts for that long dry spell, and what would be different if Texas became a swing state? This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Mary Beth Rogers was instrumental in the last gubernatorial victory by a Democrat. She ran Ann Richards' 1990 campaign and served as her chief of staff for 19 months. She also ran Richards' campaign 4 years later, when the then-governor lost her office to George W. Bush. Rogers will admit to being a dyed-in-the-wool partisan, but she is not unable to recognize what went wrong for the Democrats over the past two decades. And she believes her party could regain some of its former statewide prominence by, among other things, keeping Texas political money in Texas and making a concerted effort to appeal to white voters. Rogers explains in her new book, Turning Texas Blue, what it will take to break the GOP grip on America's reddest state. Mary Beth, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'm very happy to be here.
So there are people like you and the folks that you hang out with who sort of live and breathe politics. Do you think individual Texas voters are as loyal to their parties as the folks who are trying to convince them to vote for their campaign, their candidate?
No, not at all. I think most Texans go on about their daily lives, their jobs, their families, their community involvement, and they don't pay that much attention to what's going on politically until an election rolls around.
What does it take to get somebody who has been in the habit of voting for one party or the other to go across the aisle?
Well, it usually takes some sort of persuasive message that resonates with them. You know, Peter Drucker, the great business guru, used to say people do things for their own reasons, not yours. So if you want them to do something in conjunction with what you're interested in, you've got to give them a reason that matters to them. So it has to do with the message and the means of communication, and you have to reach people where they live, what their day-to-day lives are like.
So you have to find something that appeals to voters, and you also, you think the Texas Democrats really need to find or cultivate a dynamic leader again.
Oh, absolutely. I think we've been without strong leadership for at least a decade, and it's time to find someone or to allow someone to emerge who can connect with Texas voters in a really meaningful way.
Your old boss and colleague, Governor Ann Richards, I know that you would argue was a great example of that. And yet, on paper, she didn't necessarily look like somebody who would appeal to Texans across the board. She was divorced. She admitted that she was a recovering alcoholic. She had some issues to be dealt with.
Well, I think that's true, but what came through about Ann Richards that people resonated with is that she was totally authentic. She was herself. There was not a phony bone in Ann Richards' body. And I think that comes through to voters. That comes through to people who are paying attention. They don't want somebody who'll tell you one thing one day and do something else the next day. And Ann was not like that. What you saw was what you got. And I think that came through loud and clear.
And, of course, she rose to nationwide prominence with that 1988 speech before the Democratic National Convention.
Absolutely. She had an incredible wit about her. And I think we've all lost some of that humor and light in Texas since she's been gone.
He's like Columbus discovering America. He's found child care. He's found education. Poor George. He can't help it. He was born with a silver foot in his mouth.
Of course, if you loved Ann Richards, you loved that speech. And if you didn't care for Ann Richards and really liked George H.W. Bush, you would have thought that she was absolutely abhorrent. How did she make decisions about how and when to use humor?
Well, it was totally appropriate in that context. And the interesting thing, a little known anecdote about it, is that a month or so later, she got a gift from George H.W. Bush, and it was a little silver spoon, a little silver foot lapel pin with his thanks. And so, you know, that's the kind of interplay that could go on in politics when people are not abject enemies and at each other's throats all the time. Yes, the politics can be hard and furious, but there has to be a little bit of leeway here and there.
I have to ask you about the implosion in 1990 of the Clayton Williams campaign. This was Ann Richards' Republican opponent at the time. I'm guessing you objected to more than the tasteless joke that brought him down. But it seems that today we tolerate all kinds of troublesome statements and behavior from major candidates that once would have doomed their campaigns. What has changed?
Well, I think several things have changed. First of all, a 24-hour media culture, where everything anyone said is out there instantly, either on Twitter or email messages. And so much that really took time to develop is out there instantaneously. And so people are aware of things. But also, it seems to me that we have continued to push the boundaries of common courtesy. In many ways, our discourse can be very crude sometimes. I think that across the board, it's not particularly helpful when you're trying to solve important issues that require calm and consideration, because we do tend to get lost in those outrageous and extremist statements that generate some instant headlines and may play out over the course of the day and be gone the next day until the next outrageous statement comes along.
So Ann Richards rose to national prominence. You know, people outside of Texas knew her name following that 1988 speech at the convention. Many Texas Democrats thought that the notoriety earned by Wendy Davis for her filibuster in the Texas Senate would be a springboard. You say she failed to formulate a cohesive campaign strategy beyond that.
I think that's true, and that's one of the unfortunate things about her campaign. There were particularly young women who were hopeful about the impact of that campaign, but for a number of reasons, it was never able to develop or put out a coherent strategy, a consistent message, anything that resonated beyond that basic core group of voters who supported her in the beginning.
How does the strategy and how do the messages come together in a campaign when you probably have a number of advisors, all of whom think that their particular set of issues is the most important? How are decisions made by candidates?
Well, it's very confusing. And it's often quite contentious internally. But in a serious campaign that is well-conceived and well-run, you take time at the beginning of the campaign. First of all, you have to say, what is it that I want to do? What is my vision for this state or for this nation? And how does that resonate with what people need and want? You spend a lot of time thinking through some very basic questions, and you can develop a theme from that. The great choreographer Twyla Tharp used to talk about how she created a dance, and it resonated from a central theme. Everything in the dance had to reflect that theme, the movement of the dancers, the lighting on the dancers, the backdrop. A campaign can be like that. Once you develop that theme that resonates with people, then everything in the campaign should reflect it, and that would be your budget, your schedule, your messages, your media, your interaction with voters in small or large venues. Everything should come from that basic theme. I think that was lacking in the Wendy Davis 2014 campaign. And it's hard to put forth such a theme in the media clutter today, but it's absolutely necessary for a winning campaign.
How is it that what worked for Ann Richards in 1990 failed to work again in 1994? Of course, she had a different opponent, but had something about Ann Richards changed or had Texas changed?
Well, Texas has changed, but also Ann Richards developed an issue. She developed a theme. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's start there. The theme of Ann's campaign and her administration was, we want to create a new Texas. where everyone has an opportunity to succeed, to get a good education, to get a good job. So that was the theme of the creation of a new Texas. But there were certain issues that played out of that theme. And the campaign was able to develop issues that resonated across party lines, really, and across racial and ethnic lines. One of the issues was insurance reform. At the time, homeowners' rates, auto rates were sky high, and it was because of a lack of regulation, a lack of reform that came out of state agencies. And so that became a major plank in the platform. And it didn't matter whether you were Hispanic or African-American or Anglo. Those were issues that mattered to you. And so that reached voters within that overarching theme of a new Texas.
We're speaking this hour with political organizer and author Mary Beth Rogers. She managed Ann Richards' gubernatorial campaigns and served as her chief of staff. She has a new book out called Turning Texas Blue, What It Will Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. We'll be back with our conversation with Mary Beth Rogers in just 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Spring registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, literature, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Mary Beth Rogers. She served as chief of staff to Governor Ann Richards and ran both of her gubernatorial campaigns. Her new book is called Turning Texas Blue, What It Will Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Mary Beth, understanding what the Democrats would have to do right to regain statewide influence naturally starts with figuring out how they lost statewide influence.
Yes.
To begin with, being a Democrat in Texas has not always been synonymous with being a liberal.
No, the Democratic Party has been basically conservative, and that began to shift in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. But that's when Democrats controlled everything in Texas. And so the basic fights between progressives and conservatives occurred within the Democratic Party. You began to see a change with the rise of the Republican Party that actually began in the late 60s and continued on into the 80s, where many conservative Democrats migrated to the Republican side and began casting their votes for Republican. And so that's a little bit of the evolution of the party development here.
Why is the word liberal still something that even proud liberals, if not apologize for, worry will make them look bad?
Well, that's a question I've been trying to figure out for years, so I'm not sure there's a clear answer. But when you are attacked relentlessly, in recent years, Democrats have been, and there's not an adequate defense, the label itself becomes damaging and seems to stand for all sorts of things that may or may not exist. So I think that's one of the issues in Texas and nationally. Liberal has kind of gone out of vogue. If you notice, even I use the word progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Because progressive has a different connotation. It indicates people who want to move forward, who want to make positive changes in people's lives, and to use the tools that are available to do so, even if they're based in local, state, or federal government. So I think that term probably is much more favored by Democrats now. But I think we'll get back at some point to a classic meaning of the word liberal. Which is to identify with rights and liberties and an openness in government transactions.
A lot of people were excited a couple of years ago about this organization, Battleground Texas. For people who don't follow politics inside baseball quite as closely as you do, remind us of what this organization was set up to do.
Well, the organization was set up by several very successful operatives who came out of President Obama's 2012 campaign and created their own business and they began to look for clients. They looked at Texas, looked at the exploding Hispanic demographics here, figured out if they could make the voting population look like the changing demographic population of Texas, that Texas might be able to begin to become a swing voter state rather than a solid Republican state. Well, they came into Texas with big plans and big ideas, but basically very little concrete understanding of our state. You know, we're big and diverse, complications, complexities, conflicts, but we're also a very exciting state. We've got tremendous innovators and entrepreneurs in this state, and there was something missing in understanding basic Texas. But primarily, they focused on tactics rather than strategy. It's not enough to just go register voters and recruit volunteers. You've got to have a strategy. You've got to have something for your volunteers to do that are meaningful and that actually promote the causes. And that Battleground Texas came in with good intentions, raised a lot of money, but actually failed to deliver because their plan was lacking in basic reality of Texas politics.
Why are white people still demographically overrepresented among eligible voters in Texas?
It is a problem of the majority of Texans not coming out to vote on Election Day. We have one of the lowest turnout rates of any state in the nation. Part of it's because, you know, there's been little at stake in Texas politics. People turn out to vote when elections are exciting. And they haven't been very exciting in Texas because they've been so one-party dominated. Anytime you have one or the other party dominating every single thing, you have a declining vote turnout among your population. You have a declining interest. You got to stir up a little bit of controversy and public discussion about the issues that matter. And that really has not happened in Texas in recent years.
You say if the Democrats want to regain a statewide foothold, statewide prominence, they need to court white voters in a different way than they have before. What does that mean exactly?
Well, when you look at who votes in an off-year presidential election in Texas, by large, it is people who are older, who are white, and who keep up with politics on a regular basis. They're not occasional voters, they're regular voters. Recent exit polls on the past few elections show that about 65% of the voters who turn up on an off-year election are white. Democrats have basically ignored that fact. You can't win a statewide election if you ignore 65% of the electorate. So if Democrats want to achieve victories again statewide in Texas, they've got to develop the issues and the ideas and the message mechanisms to reach into communities where people live and affect those who are actually going to turn out and vote on Election Day.
Let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have William on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, William.
Hi, Chris. My question is, if we're wanting to turn the state blue, I still see a lot of uncontested races from the local to the state level. How do we get more qualified, quality candidates on that side of the ticket?
Thanks for your call.
That's a good question, William, and I think Democrats have been very lax in recruiting candidates, mainly because we've suffered from such strict gerrymandering in our state legislative and state Senate races, as well as our congressional races, that when you look at the turnout numbers and you look at the election results, many potential candidates will look at that and they say, well, there's no way I could win that election. So I'm not even going to try. So I think that's a basic problem in terms of recruiting candidates who will take on the opposition. But I think Democrats have to really put out a concerted effort to identify local leaders, to identify people in local communities who have relationships with others that are important, whether it's a school board member, whether it's a city council member, whether it's a volunteer with a nonprofit organization, somebody who has a network of friends and associates through which they can exert some common action. And I think the Democrats have been lax in doing that. I'm hoping that that is changing because there are some organizations now that have recognized that as a problem. And so I believe that will begin to change shortly.
There are plenty of people in Texas wealthy enough to donate to campaigns and to political organizations and parties. But because Texas isn't a swing state, often those candidates don't stay long. What can we do to encourage Texas donors to say, if we're going to put money in politics, we want that money spent in Texas?
I think they have to see that potential races are viable. Mm-hmm. Most donors, like all of us, want to support winners. And so you want to look at a race that might be winnable before you put a sizable amount of money in it. And so many large Texas Democratic donors will look at national campaigns. You know, there's just about every Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate or for Congress or for president, they all sweep into Texas and have fundraisers in Dallas and Houston and Austin and San Antonio and take out a big chunk of money. You know, President Obama has come into Texas a number of times to raise money. There are probably a dozen U.S. senators who will come into Texas, and we will see more and more of that in this upcoming election cycle. So, if we can convince Texas donors that there are viable candidates and viable races to win, then I think there's a better chance of keeping some of that important political money here in the state.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Doug on the line in Rockwall. Hi, Doug.
Yes, hi, Chris. Hey, very interesting topic. I found a textbook. I read it cover to cover, 1961. It's called Texas Politics. What's interesting about this book and your conversation today, if you look at Travis County, Harris County, and Dallas County, they were the enclaves of Republicanism back 53, 54 years ago. I put it next to, you know, we do the red and blue thing now, but this was just a shaded graph. But it was very interesting to me because it's almost like a negative of a photograph. What was dark is now light. What was light is now dark. My question for your guest is, What is causing this? Is that a function of ethnicity, density of people, education levels? What has turned the cities exactly opposite in terms of Republican Democrat from 53 years ago? I'll take my answer off here.
Thanks for your call, Doug.
I think, Doug, it has to do with population demographic shifts and people who come to the cities for jobs and for educational opportunities and for some of the amenities that cities offer. So what we have seen is the growing of minority populations within the city. And you really have seen a major shift in how major cities in Texas vote. Dallas in particular has turned from a solid Republican bastion and to a Democratic Party. President Obama has carried Dallas in his past two elections. And Democrats made a resurgence in Dallas beginning in 2004 and continuing on until today. They figured out that you had to have good candidates, that you had to raise a sufficient amount of money, and that you had to be very sophisticated in how you targeted your voters and directed your messages. So it's a combination of things. It's a combination of Democrats playing smarter and better and the populations actually shifting within the cities.
We're speaking this hour with Mary Beth Rogers. She was manager of Ann Richards' gubernatorial campaigns and served as her chief of staff and has worked for a long time as a political organizer and author. Her new book is called Turning Texas Blue, What It Will Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling in to 1-800-933-5372. You can find me on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think or email think at kera.org. We'll be back in 2 minutes with my guest, Mary Beth Rogers.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Spring registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, literature, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with political consultant and author Mary Beth Rogers. Her new book is called Turning Texas Blue: What It Will Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Texas, of course, is participating in Super Tuesday for the primary this year. Does an earlier primary have any effect on the way people choose to vote, on whether they vote?
I don't think so, and particularly this go-around, because there's going to be so much publicity and there's going to be so much interest in it. So I don't think it does. In many countries and in many states, the primary elections are much closer to the November general election. Maybe that is one reason that our voter turnout is lower. I haven't seen an analysis of it, but I know in states like Nevada, the primaries will be basically 2 months before a general election. So there's an awareness, a heightened awareness, perhaps, of what's going on.
You say in the book that Texas Democrats should learn to think like Republican strategists. What does that mean?
Well, anytime you're going to run a campaign, you need to figure out how your opponent is going to run a campaign against you. In other words, you have to vet yourself pretty well. You have to look at what the prevailing ideology is, what the current practices are, and look at yourself and say, what is in my record? What is in the record of my party that could be used to bludgeon me at a key point in the campaign? And if you think like your opponent, you might even lay out the structure or an outline of a campaign against you. And then you can be aware ahead of time of what you need to do to ward off certain blows or certain issues or to get out in front of them. So I think it's really important not to go into a campaign blindly, assuming that you've got all of the answers and that you can win on the virtue of your personality or your issues. You've got to figure out what an opponent would say and do in a campaign against you.
Liberal can a Texas Democrat afford to be? Is a Texas Democrat akin to a Massachusetts Republican?
Oh, maybe so. I don't know. I think a Texas Democrat needs to focus on Texas issues. What is important to the majority of people in Texas? What do they care about? Is it health care? Is it insurance reform? Is it clean air and water? You know, Willie Nelson used to say that when somebody asked him how he was able to write so many different kinds of melodies, and he said, you know, there are just a lot of tunes floating out there in the air, and you just have to pull one of them down and start working with it. Well, there are issues floating in the air in Texas, and a Texas Democrat who's wise and wants to connect to the people just needs to pull one or two of them out and start working with them. And that's how you begin to rebuild the party and to rebuild your brand as a Democrat.
I'm actually really curious about that process because, like anybody else, I have to imagine that even great politicians have certain things. I know this. They have certain things they truly care about and other things they just have to take care of. And yet what's really important to the voters in a particular election cycle may not be the thing that a particular candidate is passionate about. And one thinks back to the Al Gore campaign. Environment has always been very important to him. It really didn't resonate at the time that he was running.
No, but it might now because the whole issue of climate change is very important to younger voters and to younger voters in Texas. So you have to be in sync with your times. You have to understand what's out there in the culture. You have to understand what people are watching on TV, what they're reading on Twitter, how they're operating on Facebook. It's a different environment, and you have to understand where people are. You know, the great Czech philosopher and politician Václav Havel used to talk about the rule of everydayness. So what are people's like every day? What do they care about? And then if your own vision connects with that, then perhaps that's where you need to go. If your vision doesn't connect with that, if you're off in left field or right field, then maybe you shouldn't make the race.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org. We'll speak with Tony in DeSoto. Hello, Tony.
Well, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yes, my question first is, it seems as though the field in the Democratic Party is old. And I don't mean to be disrespectful, but at the end of the day, people that I vote for are above 55 and up, and there's no new ones coming and no one to hand off to. And as long as they get older, you have a young generation that's still sitting in the wings. Ted Cruz is 45, same age I am. Rubio is my age. And to me, the Democrats are going to ruin it 10, 20 years if they don't get a lot of these politicians who have been there for 25 years. And consultants, I think, are one of the main reasons why the Democratic Party is hurting now, because, like Lady said, they're not understanding my position. They are far away from where I am.
What do you think about that?
Well,
Nada?
I think there's a lot of truth in what Tony says. I think that the Democratic Party would be smarter and stronger if it had a greater connection to younger voters on a wide range of issues. I think, you know, even though our two leading candidates in the presidential race are quite a bit older than the average, I think they're trying to connect with younger voters. But I think Tony's right that we need to be looking for people, you know, as the boomer population moves on and goes into retirement and you've got a younger generation come up, the issues are quite different. The needs are quite different. And candidates across the board have to see what they are. Now, you know, in certain Republican candidates may be younger in age, but it doesn't mean they're younger in ideas and thoughts and issues.
A lot of Texas Democrats are excited about sort of investing in the future of the Castro brothers. Are they ready to take on a greater role? Could either one of them be the next great leader that the Texas Democrats have been looking
for?
It's
possible. Joaquin Castro and Julian Castro are very charismatic young men out of San Antonio. Julian was the mayor of San Antonio. Joaquin is a member of Congress right now. They're smart. They're connected to a younger demographic in the state, and it's entirely possible that one or the other might emerge as a leader. I don't know the timing of that. I think a lot of it depends on what they want and what their own vision is. They both have young families, and so that always becomes a consideration. But anybody who's interested in the future of Texas and the future of Democratic politics in Texas needs to pay careful attention to the Castro brothers.
Can you talk a little bit about your memories of just the pace of running a gubernatorial campaign in Texas? I mean, when you think back on those days, how much of it is just a blur and how much of it is crystal clear to you today?
It's a mix. A lot of it is crystal clear and a lot of it is just a blur. It's very hectic. It's no wonder people go half crazy at running a campaign, because the demands are enormous and they're constant and there's so many distractions. To me, that's why you have to have a pretty strong game plan, because all of your best friends want to tell you how to run your campaign. And if you've developed a strategy, if you know what your game plan is, then you can stick to it. You don't have to be distracted by everything that's going on the outside. It's not an easy thing to do. My own experience, I realized I spent a lot of time just doing things that were pure junk.
You've said that you felt like you wasted time on certain things. Like what?
Well, you know, you would take a call from somebody who thought, Ann Richards did not spend enough time in the feed store in my town. You have to get her back here. Well, maybe she saw 10 people in the feed store. If she'd stayed there another 10 minutes, she might have seen three more. So you have to weigh yourself, particularly when somebody who makes a call like that happens to be an elected official from the area. So there were little things like that. You took a lot of calls from people who meant well, who wanted to help, but they could serve as distractions. You had to keep the focus, eyes on the prize, as they say.
People who do the kind of work that you've done, who run campaigns, have almost identical skills to the people who are actually running for office, right? You have familiarity with the issues. You have to be able to deal with people and communicate a message. What's the difference between people who decide they want to actually put their name on the ballot and the people who want to get behind someone who puts their name on the ballot?
Well, I think it can be a difference in personality. Mm-hmm. Someone who is very comfortable in the limelight and someone who would rather be behind the scenes. But I think in terms of the skill set, the people behind the scenes are strong, should be strong managers. They should have an understanding of how to work with people, how to motivate people, how to get the detailed work done. And I think that's an important thing. While the candidate out front can deal with ideas and issues and communications, the person inside needs to make the trains run, as they say.
Realistic timetable, when do you imagine Texas might be a swing state?
Realistically, I think the Democrats might see some breakthroughs in statewide elections in 2018. I don't see Texas as a swing voter state in 2016, although there's potential to make some gains in local races, particularly in the state legislature for 2016. So realistically, by the time we get to the next presidential election in 2020, I think there's a strong chance that Texas could become a swing voter state.
Mary Beth Rogers is a political organizer who managed Ann Richards' gubernatorial campaigns and served as her chief of staff in Austin. Her new book is called Turning Texas Blue, What It Will Take to Break the GOP Grip on America's Reddest State. Mary Beth, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you, Chris. I've really enjoyed it.